family. My name is Donnie, and I am an alcoholic and an addict and a codependent and a sex deal and a gambler and a... Oh, man. Yeah, they told me, you know, I heard somebody share in a meeting one time. He said, alcohol, it was not the problem. It was the solution. Started waking up. You may have seen me hit my knees. I don't know what that really does, but my sponsors tell me to hit my knees and thank God every day. So I do that on purpose. Great to have a purpose in life. I don't know. I've never actually sat in these chairs on that side of the room at Austin Recovery, but I have done that in, you know, 5 other facilities, you know. The grace of God, I'm able to sit on this side of the room today. I don't know. How many of you in here know me? I see a lot of faces. How many of you in here know me? Have I ever done anything for you? If I don't do anything for the rest of you tonight, I hope you see passion and purpose in what this program's done for me. I hope you can find that for yourself. I really do. That is our message for Alcoholics Anonymous, is hope. And without it, we don't have anything, right? All right, let's say from the beginning. I was born to, my mother's side of the family had 9, she had 9 brothers and sisters. I have watched maybe 2 cases of beer and a half of Hetha rum between all 9 of them. They were farmers. My father's side of the family were trappers. There were 13 of them that lived beyond, you know, adulthood. There were 17 altogether, and 13 of them actually lived a full life. And I have smoked dope with all of them. I have drank with all of them. Well, except for my Aunt Eva. She's the only one that I haven't smoked dope with. But, you know. So my father's side of the family was a part of your side of the family. I was born with heart defects, congenital heart defects. I had a hole in the wall of my heart. One artery was too big and one was too small. And this was back in 1958. They had not ever done a surgery of my kind. I am the very first in the world who's had the heart muscle taken out of the chest, operated on, and put back in. That happened in 1960, Tulane University. And I spent the next 3.5 years in the hospital. My mother slept underneath the bed at the hospital, and my father chased as many women as he could catch. I know about powerlessness. I didn't come in here, bar fighting, bull riding, motorcycle crashing cowboy. I was the quiet little puke in the corner, you know. I was a caretaker. I watched, I knew about powerlessness. The first thing I knew about powerlessness when I came in here, was I was powerless over my father's alcoholism. We're powerless over someone else's drinking, right? But I didn't want to be like that. To this day, I've never had, there you go, Jim, just catch a spot over here on the out of the wall there, buddy. You know what happens when you come in late, you get called out there, dog. It's all right. I love you. Made the trip. I appreciate it, my friend. I knew when my father came home, you know, I could, you know, you can sense the tension in the air and all that stuff, you know. I didn't want to be like my father. And like I said, today, as of today, I've never had a DWI. I've never had to puke up the first 2 to keep the third one down. You know, I never beat up my wife and claim I was in a blackout. You know, my father used to get up and look for his truck, you know, in the morning, see, you know, where it was. If my truck was missing, I knew who I rented it to, you know. I mean, ba-doom, boom, yeah. You know, so I had a hard time admitting that I was an alcoholic. Despite the fact that at age 19, the doctors told me I had the starting of cirrhosis. From the age of 12, well, my parents divorced when I was 11. I smoked my second joint with my father at the age of 12. My father called my mother one night and said, Lorraine, she said, if you don't take me back, I'm going to jump off the Ship Channel Bridge. It's in Houston, Texas, the Ship Channel Bridge. My mother said, well, Dave, please look both ways. I wouldn't want you to hit a ship on the way down and break your fall. I feel like I can laugh about that a little bit now, but right then I was angry at my mother. You would allow him to kill himself rather than love him again, you know. But I didn't. I was kids. I didn't know what all she had gone through. I didn't know what all she had gone through. I only just about 9, 10 years ago at a family function, you know, my mother told me that she was going to Al-Anon. I didn't know that. I thought it was just, you know, her red hair. She radical red, what we called her, you know. She had this tough love stuff going on, you know. At any rate, age 32, 33, my wife had left me for the 100th time. I was staying with my cousin, and I couldn't pay $50 a week in rent because I'm doing $200 a day in dope, you know, that kind of thing. And I had messed around and sold the starter out of my truck for a hit. I don't know if y'all ever done that kind of shit, but I wasn't going anywhere else, and so I attempted suicide. I was going to be real neat about it, you know. I wrote me a little note and everything, and I set it in the bathroom. I went, you know, put on some short pants, and I got in the bathtub, and I sat there for about an hour, hour and a half. The water got cold, so I figured it's time, and I went. Blood spurting, and I signed my note, lit a cigarette, and my uncle, who's never been to my cousin's house ever, never been in that house, kicked in the door. The hell's going on in here? He called the ambulance. I finished the cigarette walking out to the ambulance. You know, it's God taking care of me, right? So I ended up in a psych hospital in Baytown, Texas, in H&I. How many of you are part of the H&I committees? Anybody in here doing H&I? Hospitals, institutions, get on those committees. H&I saves lives, baby. H&I saves lives. I was only there a week or two. You know, this guy kept bringing the AA meeting into the room, and I'm wondering, why are you volunteering to come out here? You know, why do you do that? Why would you do that? He said, well, it ain't for you, dude. It's for me. It keeps me sober. I really did not understand that. You know, my belief system was, you know, honesty was like, you know, not getting caught, you know, that kind of thing. my idea of hope was, you know, that homeboy would still be on the corner at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I had faith that he had let me come $3 or $4 short, you know. The kind of thing. Courage is buying dope when you can see the police right there. Oh, don't. Oh, no, no, no. But I tell me where you've been, homeboy. I think. That was my belief system, you know. When I got here, I knew that I could not admit I was alcoholic because I hadn't had all those things that I saw my father go through, you know. But I knew I was a dope fiend. I knew that. So, you know, and I talked to the counselor, and I don't see the steps up. But yeah, they are. I told him, I said, but I'm not an alcoholic. He said, well, just change the word to cocaine. And that almost killed me, guys. Because he didn't work with me to look through my own denial. He says, just see it as cocaine and move on. What I've learned is alcohol is flammable. It ignites my powder keg. When you got starting of cirrhosis at the age of 19, you drank for another 12, 14 years. You know, My attempted suicide was back in 92, I think. And I was in and out of this program. I only got 6 months sober. An attempted suicide got me 6 months sober. But I had found a home. I had found a safe place to go for 7 years. In and out of this program, in and out of jails. You know, that got me 6 months. 19 months in the penitentiary got me 2 years. You know, 14 months in the penitentiary again. You know, that got me 18 months. You know, I get 3 or 4 months out on my own, and I go. You know, they say we develop back problems. Yeah. Yeah, you get the house back, the girl back, the job back. You go back to doing it the way you were doing it, kind of thing. Yeah, I did that multiple times, because I couldn't admit I was alcoholic. I was in a Cocaine Anonymous meeting one night, and guy said, "Everybody in here knows what 10 cents of that white shit will do to the rest of your life," and I understood the desperation for that. I knew one line and I'm gone again. I knew it. He said, "But it only takes a dollar's worth of alcohol to get me there." And I woke up. I haven't had a drink or a drug since April 18th of 99, this time. This time. How many of you are here for your very first time through treatment at all? Didn't have much understanding about these steps other than what you saw in the shows and the movies, that kind of thing, right? Well, this is... College of Hard Knocks, my friend. Get in here and find out what this is about. You don't have to have multiple times. How many of you been to treatment more than 5 times? Come on. Look around, though, you first-timers. Look around, first-timers. And none of them every one of them were like me. They didn't want to go out. Just thought I could handle it. Or I allowed my emotions to take me out. Or I broke a shoelace, or it was Saturday, or whatever, you know, a payday, you know, payday's a good day to go out, you know. It don't take much when you don't have tools. I love you, Jim. I love you. A lot of you guys in here mean a whole lot to me. And Jim and Dave sitting over there, and are a big part of that. They really are. So, again, the powerless that I understood was what I saw in someone else, and I couldn't claim that as my own. Therefore, my life was unmanageable because I wasn't seeing my own truth. That honesty that they talk about, they're not talking about cash register honesty. They're talking about, look, get you a piece of paper and put, you know, pros and cons down there, what it's done for me, what it took from me, or whatever. And you know, and if you don't really think you have a problem with alcohol or drugs, ask somebody that knows you. That, you know, it don't take much. You just, you know, research it, look for it, find out what's going on with you. But the whole point is, I'm going to spend a few minutes on this powerless, on this first step, because if you can't admit that you have a problem, gambling, with codependency, you know, with sex, with emotional issues, right? With heroin, with whatever. If you can't admit that's a problem, then you're not looking for you know, hope that something's going to change in your life. You're still controlling what's going on. And that's about turning it over. You know, I really appreciate the we. That's an innate way of doing it. You know, when I got here the first time, they kept telling me, say, you know, turn it over, turn it over. And what do you mean, turn it over? Oh, let God handle it. Turn it over, turn it over. Well, I just about 4 years ago found out what they really mean by turn it over. If you don't mind, hold on.
Turn the W over.
You got to turn the M in me over to we and get connected. It's that simple. Get connected with somebody else. Be accountable to somebody else. You know, discipline yourself to do the same things that they told you to do the first month you were here. From now on. Look, I heard someone say, if a doctor told you you had cancer or diabetes, and all you had to do was make friends with somebody else that has cancer and diabetes, huh? To check on them once in a while and pray about your situation, do you think we'd cure cancer and diabetes by now? Huh? Yeah. But what about addiction? Huh? Addiction is a disease also. It's a disease of the mind. Look, if you've been here 10 days plus, you've pretty much detoxed, except for all you weed heads, I guess. I don't know. We'll give you a few more weeks. But in general, if you go to detox after 10 days, the body's clean. So then it's between the mind and the spirit. You have to have the mindset that says you want to do what's good for all. How many of you have heard about the golden rule? Raise your hand. So you have some sense of a higher power. How many of you are like me and said, screw that, when you're out there doing drugs, you know? I mean, I don't care about what I'm going to do to you before you do to me. Isn't that how we live? Wasn't that our mantra? It's about caring about somebody else again. And you can't do that if you're not armed with the facts about yourself. Look, take 30 days, 60 days and learn about these steps. You know, take 3 months and get through a fourth step and you know, get a good sponsor and learn how to work this simple program so that you can take somebody else through it and save their lives as well. You know, I don't know why this comes to mind, but my first wife and I had split up multiple times, right? And I pulled up at the house where she was at one night, and I had this van, you know how us hippies are. And I told her, come out to the van, you know. I got some dope. We used together from the first night, and then she was trying to get away from it. And, you know, I tried to get her to use with me, because I figured if I get her to use with me, she'd come home again. And she said no. I just couldn't understand that. Couldn't understand why she wouldn't use with me. She said, you're the kind of person that takes people down with you. Yeah, it took 3 weeks to get her over home. But she didn't go home that night, and I remember that. You know? I didn't think I was that kind of person. I thought I'm the party guy, you know, I'll supply it, you know, come on, go with me. But that's not the way other people see it, you know. Step two, coming to believe. I had my grandfather on my father's side was a Pentecostal preacher, and he one Easter he preached in front of his congregation, about 500 people. Easter night, like we always did in our deals, you know, I'm probably 8, 9 years old. We went out to a bar, you know, and everybody's getting drunk, and some guy beat my grandfather in a game of pool, so he bit his ear off. And I'm thinking, while they're sitting there fighting, that's preacher, that's a God man, that's, you know. No, I'm not doing that, you know. I had a problem, and I shared that in treatment, my first time I went to treatment. And the counselor told me, he said, you have been spiritually raped. Really? He said, yeah. He said, your idea of God has been skewed, you know. So choose your own deal of God. You know, this is going to sound funny, but, I want to say, what color is your God? Don't take that many wrong way. I'm just, other than, for me, I like the color green. One particular day, I'll tell you how it came about. My first wife and I had a buy, sell, and trade, and I was always, you know, getting things off the side of the road, and, you know, this, that, and the other. And one day, while I'm in recovery, you know, I'm going to work. They had this big 10-foot fence, and they had these 3 Rottweilers. And I had to walk by this fence every day to get to this guy's house so I could go to work. And these dogs just jumping all over that fence. Woo, woo, woo. Anyway, the bottom line is one particular day, the gate was open. And I could see it. And I asked God to help me here, you know. I had to go to work. And this part of me said, well, if I get mauled, I'll sue that son of a bitch. You know, and another part of me says, have faith, right? So I walked on past the dog. Dogs never barked, never got up. And it was like, thank you, Jesus. Anyway, on the way back home, there was a pile of somebody had gotten put out. And there was a set of pots and pans. Now, I'm in a transitional living center. I don't need a set of pots and pans. But it's beautiful porcelain green. And I started, just fell in love with the color. And I grabbed those pots and pans and started gathering my stuff back. I don't know about the rest of you, but, you know, I sold everything I had. I don't know if anybody knows anything about Telephone Road in Houston. But, yeah, I'm standing over there off Makawa Drive and you know, at 2:30 in the morning trying to sell a lantern. I sold all my camping equipment, all my stuff. Anyway, so anyway, at this moment, I saw this nice set of pots and pans, and I grabbed it, and I go back to the treatment facility with it, and I stick it in there, and I love the color green, and I started thinking about that color green, what it did for me inside. I love the color green. I see God in that. For me, now, whatever your favorite color is, I challenge you from now on, if you see your favorite color, think about God showing up in your life. You know, I see green shirt over there. I see God. Yeah, you know, I see God. That's my perception. It's my choice to do that. You know, I had to work with something because I didn't really believe in the JC thing. But I had a good sponsor told me, he said, the acronym for God, you know, good orderly direction. Oh, here we go. We're back to the golden rule again. Good, orderly direction. For me, that was what it took for me. I knew I had to live and change my life and start living in a good, orderly direction. And every time I saw the color green, you know, coming over here tonight, coming down 1327, I remember, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, and I used to work here at Austin Recovery. I was here for almost 12 years. And when I used to work out here at the ranch, one day I'm coming in, I'm depressed, sad, angry about something, and I'm looking for something green, right? You know, I'm usually in traffic, if a green car passes me, that's God saying, follow me, you know? If he's green car behind me, that's God got my back, you know, and all that. I play with it, but I'm looking for something bigger than me. One day I'm coming into work here and I didn't see any green cars. There were no cars on the highway. And I'm like, you know, God, where are you? And I closed my eyes for a second and I opened them and there was a green sign and green trees and green grass. I thought, oh, you just got to open your eyes and look. Where's God in your life? You know, where's the higher power in your life? You know? That is where this whole thing really kind of starts. Is having a belief that this will work for you. You know, I think it was Henry Ford or somebody said, there's a man who thinks he can and a man who thinks he cannot. Both are right. Both are right. If you don't think you can do this, you're not going to try. What I ask you to do is take a look around. You get a closet smoking alcohol, puking dope fiend like me with 19 years up here, having gone back to school at the age of 41 to become a counselor. Look, you know, my handwriting is bad and my spelling is worse. If it wasn't for spell check, I wouldn't have a job at all. You know, I mean, my God, he has taken care of me. He's taken care of me. I could go another 45 minutes on how God worked in my life to get me on this side of the desk. I hope what you're hearing is that, you know, that you're not too old to go back to school. Huh? Yeah, you're not too old to start this thing over again. If God woke you up this morning, it means he got a plan for you. You know? All that's important to understand. You know, okay, again, that's step two, is you got to come to believe. You got to find hope. Step three is about faith. Turning my will and my life over. You know, I asked a sponsor one time, how do I know I work step three? He said, well, you pick up a pencil and start step four. That's too simple for me. You know how I knew I didn't step three? Somebody offered me a hit and I didn't take it. Turn my will and my life over. One of my mantras is this. Y'all repeat after me. Alcohol is liquid dope. And free dope costs me everything. Let's say it together. Alcohol is liquid dope. Free dope costs me everything. Absolutely. And I've experienced that so many times. You know? In fact, when my first wife and I were together, I would talk to the old boy and tell him, look, she gets paid today. Give me a dime. And it worked every time. And that's the kind of husband I was. That's the kind of, you know, I mean, crazy. Freaking crazy. For like 6 months, I worked for my uncle, who's passed on now, of this disease. You know, they'd have to come and get me from Houston, take me to Rosenberg, and I'd stay gone all week long and work for my uncle. And, you know, he'd pay me $280, and I'd come home on a Friday night. By Saturday morning, we had smoked it all up. She's trying to pay the bills, you know, and I'm gone the whole time. You know, we woke up one day and said, you know, why am I going back to work? You know, why do that? Why be gone all week long, you know, and do that? You know, I keep saying about my ex-wife. You know why she's my ex-wife, right? Yeah. Thanks to this program, though, we're really great friends today. Really great friends today. So the program does work. That's step three, is when somebody offers you something and you don't take it, you know. Step four, the courage to write that stuff down. The principle behind that step is the courage to write that stuff down. If it comes to mind, write it down. If you're working with a sponsor, let me rephrase that. You can't do it without a sponsor. You got to have a sponsor to show you how to do it. Because if you're like me, you'll wallow in all that shame and guilt and pity and this, that, and the other. And one of the sayings is, and I think Chris knows it, if you don't do a fourth, you'll drink a fifth. Yeah. My fourth step stuff, I learned patterns of about myself. I learned things about myself. Look, nobody does a perfect fourth step. One of my last big fourth steps, I had written, I'd done them before. So, I got like 65 things on this paper. You know, I got it all written out, and I'm doing real, really thorough. My sponsor kept saying, is there anything else? Is there anything else? And I said, oh, yeah. I pissed dirty for CPS and lost two kids. He said, well, write it down. I said, no, you don't understand. I'm crying now. I'm hurt that I didn't remember that. Right? He said, write it down. It's not priority how it comes to you. Just write it down. Let's move on. So, you know, what I'm trying to tell you is, if it comes to mind, write it down. If it doesn't, you'll figure out a way. All you're trying to do in the fourth step is learn a technique on how to see your part in things. I came out here one time, out here to the ranch, to do a fifth step with a guy, and he had five women on his fourth step. That's all that was on his fourth step. Nothing else. You know, two of them had cheated on him, and three of them had stole from him. I told him, look, dude, I said, you're not complete. This is not a complete fourth step. I said, but let's look at where you're at. Who picked them? What's wrong with your picker that you can't, you know, find a healthy woman? You know? Pickers broke. Yeah, I held on to that for a long time. Held on to that about picker being broke. Then I heard a speaker share one time. He said, I didn't have a picker. I went with anybody that would accept me. And that was another thing that I woke up to. You know what I mean? Codependency was so bad, you know. I was in a relationship for 8 months. And we broke up, and I'm hurting for 18 months, you know. I was licensed by then. You know, even on this side of the desk, we're still human, Holmes, you know. But what I learned through that, I was crying about this. I was at a park with my second ex-wife, crying about this relationship. She said, why are you still holding on to that relationship? I said, well, in this program, we've been taught not to let go 5 minutes before the miracle. She said, why don't you let go and 5 minutes later see what other plans God has for you? What I learned through all of that was that as long as I'm hating her, I have a connection with her. As nasty as it was, as hurtful as it was, I was trying to control, you know, something. I was under the illusion that I had a connection with her still. So being able to forgive her and, you know, drop the lawsuits I had against her, oh, you know, all that stuff. It's a long story. But, yeah. But anyway, yeah, so that's in the fifth step. You know, when you're doing a good fifth step with the sponsor, and hopefully he'll ask you, is there anything else? Because you're not going to do a perfect one. That's the whole point, is you're just learning how to learn a technique on how to look at your part in something, right? Sixth step, the character defects. Six and seven is kind of like this. Six is learning you have a flat tire. Seven is not getting out to fix it, that kind of thing. Do you have something that's not working for you? And seven is whether or not you're going to do something about it, right? Lying, cheating, stealing. We all know that those are rites of passage for a good dope fiend, you know? But it's that interpersonal stuff that I don't want you to see my handwriting because I don't spell very well. I don't read very well. You know, it's that interpersonal insecurities that keep me separated from you. You know, they say my relationship with others start, you know, where my secret, you know, my relationship with you stops where my secrets start. If there's something about me I can't talk to you about, that's where my secrets are, you know. You know, it's humbly asking God to help me let go of some of our character defects. You know, I like the seventh-step prayer, you know, to my Creator, I'm ready, now that you have all of me, the good and the bad, please remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness. Just because you get angry, just because you have some of your character defects are survival mechanisms for you. You know, I mean, we're not all bad people. We're not. You know, there's a whole lot of good about us. I think that's why God has chosen us to. How many of you know somebody's died of this disease? Hang around, homeboy. Somebody you know is going to pass. They say you don't know how heavy this program is until you feel the weight of somebody's casket. You know, that's it. And I've been there, seen that too. I'm trying to get through the steps here. We've got about 10 more minutes. If I... eight, making a list of all the harm. You know, my sponsor had me make it three different categories. The amends that I know I need to make, I'm willing to make. Those that I should make and those that I won't make. You know, write them down in that deal. Right now you're just making a list. You don't have to tell nobody nothing, that kind of thing. One of the greatest... So that helped me start with the ones that you will make so that you learn what it is. Does anybody owe you money? No? Does anybody owe you an amends? How important is that to you? They feel the same way. Do unto others as you'll have them do unto you. You know what I mean? Again, we're back to the golden rule. Let's deal. Step nine, making amends. One of the greatest amends I made was to my brother-in-law. Long story, we're in Galveston. We're all drunk. We're stuck on the beach, and I saw this little trailer with a truck sitting over there. I figured somebody's home, knocking on the door, nobody answering the door, you know. So I'm looking in, and I realized that's not a house, that's a bait shop. So I took a 2x4 off the fence, and I broke the door down, and I go in, and I grab all the rod and reels and shit I could carry, and I go back to the car. Oh, Dad, I mentioned we were stuck, right? So, yeah. Yeah, my brother-in-law called me a dumbass, and we got into a little pushing match, and I left everything there, and I grabbed his wallet out of the car before I left. you know, had $20 in it. And I was afraid to tell him. All these years and years went by, years and years go by. You know, I'm sitting at Thanksgiving with him and shit, and I'm looking, and I know in my heart and my mind I've got, you know, this is eating at me. But I'm afraid if I tell him, he's going to whoop my ass, right? Self-preservation, my friends, okay? Yeah. So I told my sponsor about that. He said, how much was in there? He said, $20. He said, was his driver's license in there? I said, yeah. He said, so that's 50. He said, was his Social Security card in there? I said, yeah. He said, that's 75. Now, see, my brother-in-law had ripped me off for 3 unemployment checks. He never paid his share of the rent. You know, he owed me money. We was on a job together. He took a $500 draw and quit the next day. I had to pay that shit back. So I had this feeling, but I knew what I had done to him had kept us separate. And bottom line is I went and I gave him the money. Okay, it was only $50 because I drove from Houston up here to Austin to make that. But I gave him $50. You know, I had to pay for gas. And he said, wow, Don, he said, I thought the record driver got that wallet, you know. He had never, but that's where the freedom comes. Look, up until that moment, I was just dry. Look, I know they tell you if you don't use today, you're sober. That's not 100% true. You just haven't drank today. You know, if getting locked up and going to treatment turned out sober people every day, there'd be, you know, millions of sober people out there. It's that perspective change. It's that feeling good about who I am and why I'm doing this. That's sobriety. You know, I really believe that sobriety don't come till you start making this ninth step amends. I just, that's my opinion. Okay. Tenth step is what I learned in the fourth step all day long, doing what you learned in the fourth step, looking at your part in things. When you know you've been an asshole to somebody, you know, you may not have to, you know, promptly admit it could mean tomorrow. But, you know, listen, if you, how many of y'all all doing morning meditations, right? Y'all doing nightly reviews and stuff like that, right? What you could have done better, do you owe an amends, that kind of stuff? If you're not doing those things, you're just visiting this program. You're not working it. You're visiting. You know, keep coming back. That's where that comes from. Keep coming back. 11-step prayer and meditation. I do that every day. I have to. I have to stay sober. 12-step being of service. Look, if you're not... I said something the other day in a meeting the other day at my home group, you know, about if you don't know where the mop is, you're just visiting. You know, if you're not being of service, if you're not chairing meetings, you're not stacking chairs, picking up trash, doing something for you're not you're just visiting. You know, we're running short on time, but there's two things I want to do if you don't mind. Show you what 19 years of Narcotics Anonymous looks like. Next 5 years, I was in treatment, and Narcotics Anonymous came to treatment, and they were giving out the key tags and stuff, and the white key tags were surrender tags, right? And when I walked up to the front, one of the guys had a key tag on his finger like that. When I first went to treatment, how many of you here are facing the war? Got your wedding ring on? No? Got your wedding ring on? Yeah? Y'all got more balls than I have. My counselor made me take mine off, and I told him I was going through the divorce and made me take my ring off. And it was like, rip the mask off. You know, this is where we find out where we really are. But anyway, I saw that guy with that, and I was my second wife
was an ex-probation officer, not mine, but, but she was a probation officer in her career, and she knew I was going to take a long time to get sober. She said, I'm going to give you 5 years to get your life straight, and then you come back to me, you hear? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And then that's when I got a divorce. You see, I was dating her daughter before we got... Anyway.
Bottom line
is I took my wedding ring off again because of that situation, and I put on the heat bag on my hands, and I wore that my 30 days in treatment. I washed my ass, and I did. I kept that heat bag on my hands. I said, why are you doing that? I said, because my... He said, don't they get in the way? I said, yes, so does my use. And they asked me, they said, isn't that heavy? I said, yes, so is my use. You know? Thing about all this is, I saw a boy, and every 90 days, I go to a spiritual camp out in Mississippi, Texas, for Narcotics Anonymous. Y'all are all welcome. I'm joining us on Mexican in November. It's called Texas Unity Convention. And again, it happens every 90 days. I went my first time almost 17 years ago. I have not missed one yet. And I went up there, again, I'm struggling out, I'm getting my life back together. I bought a tent at a garage sale, and I had my lantern and stuff one day at a garage sale, this, that, and the other. And I had my stuff back together, and I saw this flyer about this camp out for Narcotics Anonymous about almost a year and a half, almost 2 years over. And so I went to go to this deal. I figured I'd find hooked up with somebody, you know. I find me a girl, you know. They said everybody there talks to God.
Everybody there talks to God. Said if you're having sex, it's oh God, oh God, oh God. And if you're not, it's oh God, oh God, oh God. But everybody talks to God. So I went up there, and
I went up there chasing skirt. That's what I did. And I hooked up the girl. This old lady, and a 5 hour drive back to Houston. And they had, on Sunday, they had this God we call God, and everybody laid down on the floor, and they really let this stuff go. And there was a bit of boy there, he was kicking heroin. And he was really twitching. And I was sitting on the back of the wall like that, and I'm watching this guy twitch, and something said, go put your arms around him. Go hug him. And I did. I listened to that. I got off my ass. I went down and got on the floor with him, and I held on to him for a minute. When I put my arms around him, God put his arms around us, and I understood what this program is about. We hold each other when we hurt. Be available. Put together a support system that will be there for you. Because life's going to come at you. It's going to happen. It's going to hurt. You're going to need somebody.